Chapter 31. Winton. In the rural valley in the middle of Andrevale, life followed the seasons without being affected by outside disruptions. News of distant places was accepted on par with a thunderstorm seen off in the distance, a far-off disturbance that would blow over before it touched them. A coarse paper broadsheet was printed in Gulltown, the most populous city of the duchy, and whenever townsfolk visited, they would return with a copy to share out amongst their neighbours. Willem felt that as a peacekeeper he was duty-bound to keep up with events. Stahlia was especially interested in anything having to do with royal history or court, because these themes filled her tapestries. Thus, their household usually got its turn with the sheet before it got smudged or tattered by too many hands. Through broadsheets, they had learned of Queen Cressa's mustering the allied fleet, of the other weirboats being sent by her loyal regent to join the fight, of King Rikil of Lothrod lending his brother and major warships, and King Kentros of Rothrod sending an admiral and 12 more ships. The paper reported on Duke Naven's trip to Gulltown to see off their own sea gull, a small vessel crewed by local boys. The whole family eagerly awaited more news of the adventures of Seagull and the Allied fleet's victories against the Pellish. By the time Wren had 12 summers and Percy 13, she found herself relatively settled in the routine of home life with Teta Stahlia and Teta Willem. Her role-playing appeared to have fooled the community. Privately, Wren thought she had considerable acting talent, and sometimes she toyed with the fancy of running away to join a troupe of players. The only person who regarded Wren with anything approaching suspicion was Stahlia. Wren insisted both on keeping her hair short and on wearing split skirts, suitable for jumping on a horse at any moment. And her foster mother found such choices odd and unbefitting a young woman. After a few heated occasions when she defied Stahlia and yelled, "You're not my real mother!" Wren learned to bridle her tongue. Once Willem had sent her to fetch Stahlia in the Church of the Waters, and she'd overheard Sister Nelsepeta and Stahlia conversing. "I imagine Nargis brought you, Wren," said Nelsepeta, "because she knew you would be a good mother to a difficult child. I've seen her over these years. She's a strange child, what with her shyness, yet those eyes that see everything. I can't think of another mother who would do a better job with her. Those Donegils, they're queer folk." Stahlia's voice answered, "When I try to talk to Willem, he says something like, 'You have to remember she grew up all alone in Anderswood. She's a timid, wild creature.' Except oft times, she's not timid. Underneath that shyness, you hit steel." Nelsepeta laughed. "You've got steel in you, Stahlia. That's why you recognise it in her." Wren tiptoed away, vowing to stay more on her guard with her foster mother. Fortunately, the whole family was distracted. Before Winterfest, Stahlia gave birth to a healthy baby boy, Tilim. Tilim shared Stahlia's large eyes and light brown hair, though his locks stood up every which way, as if licked by several extremely persistent cows. As doting older sisters, Persia and Wren cared for him whenever Stahlia worked at her loom. Wren now understood that Stahlia's craft kept the family comparatively well off for Winton. Duke Naven believed in paying in compliments rather than coin, so Willem's salary barely covered their food. Farmers' children fared poorly during the years when harvests fell scant. Many days they had only biscuits made of ground acorns to eat, and then they had a hard time concentrating on their lessons. And the town's merchants depended on the farming families having coin to spend. Stahlia's tapestries, which pleased the nobles and rich merchants in the eastern duchies, brought in commissions that spared the family from the scarcity so many of their neighbours endured. Wren learned little from the teachers in her school, but a lot about aspects of rural life. To supplement her schooling, Wren read her Tetter's books on Weir lore. The books taught her that the duchy system had been established in the era of Krylinda the Fertile. Most Weir queens gave birth to only one child, the daughter and heir. But Krylinda had borne not only an heir, but also seven sons. This was during a time when the central government struggled to keep order throughout the length and breadth of the realm. So when the boys came of age, Krylinda named them dukes and gave them all territories to administer. Over hundreds of years, four sons of later queens had joined the original seven to make 11 duchies, 8 in the west and 3 across the Bay of Cinder. This history also explained the small tapestry hanging in her Tetter's bedroom, picturing a queen, a young blue-haired princella, and seven naked amber-haired baby boys crawling around their feet. Wren pointed out to Stahlia that the seven boys could not all have been babies at the same time. Stahlia, snuggling her own precious newling, laughed and answered, "Artistic license." Wren asked Willem to borrow books from Duke Naven's library, but made him swear to say his wife asked for them, not his adopted daughter. Wren never wanted to call attention to herself, especially not with any of the nobility. Willem complied without questioning her whim. Wren worked alone on another part of her education, her talent. Whenever she found solitude, she sought to discover its possibilities and limits. So far, she could only talk to one beast at a time, and the connection became stronger if she could touch the animal. However, she didn't need physical contact with birds, and many seemed eager to converse if she approached. Most animals recognised her, but some refused to acknowledge her as royalty, and these wouldn't mind her. For instance, the raccoons wouldn't leave the cottage's chickens alone just on her say-so, so she had to threaten she'd lead Willem to their tree hollow. And so far she couldn't converse with anything that lived in water. Meanwhile, Persia had developed her own magical ability. Ever since the Nargis fountain had healed her leg, Persia had fallen in love with dancing. She loved the music. She loved to make her skirts twirl around. She loved to learn the steps and she loved the excitement. She relished her own natural grace and skill. The local dancing master asked Percy to train with the older children she was teaching to perform in festivals. The whole family travelled over to Glinton for Summer Solstice Fest to watch Percy perform. As a jewel shines in a setting, so she shone in the midst of her fellow dancers. A dancing master from Gulltown recognised Persia's grace and skill. She approached Tetter Starling about having Persia come to study with the Gulltown dancers. Willem and Stahlia promised to consider the opportunity. Persia begged to go, though her parents felt loath for her to leave their care. Over several days, they worked out an arrangement. Persia would travel to Gulltown on the milk wagon at the beginning of the week, board with the family of a peacekeeper Willem knew, and return on the post wagon 4 days later. Willem would take her to the city after Harvest Fest. Persia's upcoming absences would affect them all, but Wren would suffer the most. Wren still used Persia as her emotional mainstay and her mouthpiece for most of her requests. When Persia left, Wren would be both lonely and more exposed. Syrup and Gilly had little to offer her other than love, and Speckles provided scant comfort. When she moped about the arrangement, he responded unsympathetically, "All fledglings must fly." Fortunately, a newcomer showed up in Winton that summer. Like Wren, Lemley was an outsider. His parents had died the previous year of the pox, and he came to live with his uncle, a veteran of the War of the Priests, on the outskirts of Anders Wood. He was a slender boy with a pretty face, and the other children shunned him, jeering that he acted like a girl. Wren had seen him around the small village, but their friendship started one hot summer afternoon when she took Tillim to splash in Winton Creek. Wren rolled her breeches up to mid-thigh, took off all the babe's clothes, and sat him chest-deep in the transparent water in the shallow nook where the stream was warm and smooth sand created a tiny beach. Tillim cooed and splashed while Wren talked baby talk to him and trickled drops onto his head. Light filtered through the trees and gleamed off the creek. Several ducks that had originally been startled by human interlopers went back to bobbing upside down. Wren dripped a handful of water over her own head and down her neck, relishing the relief from the muggy heat.
"Hello,"
called Lemley, coming down the twisting path. "Hey!" Wren darted a quick glance in his direction, relieved that it was him and not someone else from the village.
"Do you mind if I sit here too?"
"We don't mind, do we, Tillim?"
On the bank, Lemley took off his shoes. He looked around himself and gathered and arranged a few small pieces of debris.
"What are you doing?"
asked Wren.
"Making a toy for the babe. Look."
He was clever with his long fingers. He had fashioned a little rattle out of a stick, a nutshell, some reeds and some gravel. He shook it for Tillim, who crowed with delight.
"Thanks," said Wren.
As Tillim smashed the rattle into the water, startled when the splash hit him in the face, she asked,
"Do you have brothers and sisters?"
"Not anymore," he answered.
Wren let the silence alone. And in a moment, Lemley explained,
"My aunt in Boston took them in."
Wren heard the unsaid completion of the sentence,
"And she wouldn't take me."
"I'm sorry," said Wren. "That stinks. That stinks so much."
"You're the one who's also lost her real family?" asked Lem, rolling up his trousers.
"Aye," said Wren, again addressing the baby. "And I was lucky to end up where I am, here with Tilly Dilly."
"And I was lucky to end up with my uncle, though sometimes I have to remind myself."
Lemley slipped into the creek, letting out a sigh of relief at the cool water.
"Me too,"
said Wren, with a crooked smile, daring to meet his face.
"Living somewhere new, it takes time to adjust. Because in the new place, you have to be someone new too."
"I hadn't thought of it that way."
Lemley waded deeper for a few moments and then came back to play with Tillim with her. The baby shrieked with delight when Lemley pretended he was a fish come to eat little baby toes.
"In the long evenings, the village boys play water sprout. Are you going to play with them?"
Wren asked. Lemley shook his head decisively. After a while, Wren asked,
"Do you think Tillim's getting cold?"
"Could be."
"I'm going to take him out," she decided.
They sat together on the grassy bank, letting the sunshine dry the baby's tawny skin and the hems of their sleeves and rolled up trousers. Tillim kept rubbing his face, so Wren picked him up against her chest and patted him the way she'd seen Stahlia soothe him. Lemley and she talked quietly over the drowsing babe. Wren found herself confessing to Lemley her dread of Percy leaving for Gulltown, and realised he was a much more sympathetic listener than Speckles. She could tell that his hands were busy again, but he was keeping his handiwork, whatever it was, on the side away from her. When they heard the shouts of other Winton children rushing to the creek after chores, without open acknowledgement, they both knew they wanted to leave. As Wren rose to take the baby home, Lemley offered her a scrap of sacking on which he'd sketched a likeness of the wild iris blooming by the bank. Wren relished the way Lem accepted her, just as she was, without asking prying questions about her quirks. When they had free time, the two would often take long hikes to spots that became their special places, including a hilltop that provided a grand view of the valley. The meadow filled with wildflowers, and a hidden turn where Winton Creek pooled deep and green. Often they would share confidences, such as Lemley's worry about a gang of village toughs that called him names and gave him a shove whenever they crossed paths, or Wren's confused complaints about her family or town life. Sometimes they wouldn't talk at all, just tramp in silence, smelling the pines and listening to the bird calls. If she needed to bring Tillam along, Lem was unfailingly patient and would offer to strap the babe around himself even before Wren felt his weight as a burden. School began again once grain harvesting concluded. Lem was in the same class as Wren and Persia, the last their underschool offered. By age 12 or 13, village boys and girls went out to labour or apprentice, or if their families were rich and had ambitions for their child to become a healer or a merchant, they might be sent to upper academy in a bigger town like Glinton. One afternoon in mid-autumn, a week before Persia was to leave, Lem was walking with the girls on the path toward their cottage, which was a tolerable way out of his own route, when six village boys, led by Ferl, accosted them.
"Scuttle on home, wenches. We need to have a chat with Lem here," said Ferl.
"I have no business with you," replied Lem, stretching his hands out.
"Oh, but we have business with you," said Alat,
a big, dull boy with bad skin.
"We saw you, I am Ferl. We can teach you a lesson. Persia, Wren, scoot along now."
"No," said Wren. She didn't have to search for this courage. It was unthinkable that she would abandon her friend in this situation.
"We've warned you," said Ferl.
"Now hold on, boys," said Persia, assuming her father's reasonable manner. "You don't want to cause any trouble. Such a nice day. There's no need to be cross or unfriendly."
The boys paid no attention to Persia. Ferl spat on the ground and muttered dark curses under his breath. Wren whispered to her,
"You've got to get help."
"I'll stay."
"No, you must go. Go now."
Moved by the note of command in Wren's voice, Persia sped off. Wren pulled the small dagger she always wore on her belt. Lem picked up a long stick. By instinct, they placed themselves back to back. The boys started by shouting insults at Lem. Then they picked up cowplops and earth clods and began throwing them. Wren and Lemley stuck together, moving slowly down the path, and dodged the missiles as they could.
"Score!"
shouted one of the boys when he hit Lemley on the forehead with a cowplop.
"When I'm queen, won't I teach you manners?"
Then the gang moved on to pebbles, when Naltin struck Lem on the forehead with a large pebble, breaking the skin. The sight of the blood spurred them to closer contact. The ruffians began pushing and shoving.
"Beg pardon? And mayhap we'll leave you alone," said Ferl.
But instead of giving in, Lem lashed out with the bit of a branch in his hand, giving one of the crew a resounding whack.
"We'll teach you,"
shouted someone, and the shoves became fists and kicks. Lem fought wildly until his stick broke. Wren used her knife with icy control. She did not want to kill anyone, so she poked fleshy places like buttocks and thighs. Someone got behind her and wrapped his hands about her neck. Another boy grabbed her wrist and kept banging it against his knee until she dropped the dagger. The boy choking her let go once she opened her hand, so Wren whirled around and butted him in the belly as hard as could with her head tucked, and felt triumph when he fell down with the wind knocked out of him. Then she jumped on another boy's back and bit his ear. Despite their aggressive defence, neither Wren nor Lemley equaled their attackers in size or brawn, and 6-2 was a ratio they could not overcome. Soon, Lem rolled up in a ball on the ground, protecting himself from kicks, while Wren kept inserting herself between her friend and his attackers.
The village boys repeatedly threw her off to the side where she skidded on the rough ground on her hands and knees.
Out of nowhere, Gilly dashed into the melee. Old Gilly could not quite bring herself to bite anyone, but she barked up a storm and made angry little rushes, disrupting the attack. Stalia, right behind the dog, had torn down a hazel branch and began raining blows down on the boys.
Corbury! Alet! Furl! Switch! Switch! You lay off that boy this minute! Switch! Do you mind me? If there is anything in this duchy, switch, switch, I cannot abide. Switch, 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 'tis a bully.
Such was Stalia's rage and authority that the boys broke and ran, leaving Lem moaning on the ground. Stalia took one look at him and turned to Persia, who stood a few paces behind her, gaping and holding her side from a stitch.
Percy! Run to town and fetch Healer Goddard, said her mother, breathing hard.
Then she put her arm under Lem's back and started walking him to their cottage. Wren followed behind, coughing, dizzy and hurting, spitting blood from a cut lip and picking bits of cow dung off her face and out of her hair. It seemed to take forever to reach their lane. Gilly walked by her side.
Little princess, one loves thee. Stand still and let one lick thy hurts.
Stalia seated Lem in a chair and hurried back to help Wren the last 30 paces to the cottage. She pumped water and held rags to their various wounds. Lem's eyes looked unfocused and he still made pitiful sounds. After what seemed like forever, Goddard arrived on horseback with Persia clinging on behind. He said nothing consoling or sympathetic, but he crossed straight to Lemley.
His shoulder is out of place. Missus, stand behind him and hold your arms across his chest. Don't let him move now.
Goddard jerked Lemley's arm straight and to the side. With an audible pop, it snapped back into its socket. Lem's moan ceased and he gave Wren a weak nod. Peremptorily issuing orders about basins of water or getting him more light, Goddard sewed up the boy's deeper cuts and splinted his broken fingers.
Your turn, show me that wrist.
Goddard's hands probing Wren's swelling wrist were not particularly gentle.
This is just a green stick break, I'll splint it.
He also fixed a cooling poultice for the darkening bruises around her neck.
Here, missus, he said to Stalia. This is a tincture of willow bark, put drops in their tisane. If you need me, I'll be at home or at the arms. So far, you owe me 3 silvers.
Willem has our purse on him. He'll settle up when he comes home.
See that he does, said Goddard as he departed.
Persia, who had watched all the doctoring with concern, asked,
Mama, where's Tillim?
Oh, sweet Nargis. I forgot all about him. I left him in his cradle in the workshop. Lamb, will you get him while I see to these two?
Stalia washed the rest of the dirt and manure off Lem and Wren with hands as gentle as Goddard's had been brusque. She gave Wren something to bite on to make the cut on her lip clot and brewed her some willow bark tisane. But she encouraged Lem to down 2 stiff shots of brandy. After creating a bed of quilts and cloaks on the floor of the front room, Stalia helped Lem lie down. He drifted off into a half doze, though he called out and twitched as if he were still fighting. Persia cooked everyone porridge, changed and fed Tillim, and put the babe to bed. No one spoke much. Persia was struck dumb by the gravity of events. Wren's cut lip made speaking painful. Stalia's mouth was tightened with temper. Her foster daughter had never seen her so angry. Wren ached so, and now she was frightened of the consequences of the fight. Would one of the boys die? Would Lem be all right? Would the Duke have to be informed? Would this lead to her secrets being discovered? too worried and uncomfortable to sit still, Wren fidgeted around the little room until Stalia, sitting in a rocking chair, reached out her long arms to draw her into her lap. Since the first weeks of her arrival, Wren always avoided physical touch from her foster parents. This evening, in her need, she allowed herself to relax. Stalia gently stroked her forehead, rocked the chair, and sang a few of the stanzas from songs about Weir Queens. Wren felt comforted. Night fell, yet Willem had not returned from his ride, though he often travelled far and stayed out late. Speckles circled outside. These days Wren could hear him even when he flew farther away. The owl sent to her, "Man coming." Soon they all heard a knock on the door, and Percy rushed to open it. There stood Lem's uncle. Though shrunken with age, Rooks held his body straight like the soldier he once had been.
"My Lem has not come back from school, and I've started to worry. Have you seen him?"
Stalia apologised for neglecting to send word, invited him in and told him about what had happened. Lem slept on fitfully. His uncle sat down cross-legged on the floor beside him. All Hatteta had to offer him to eat was cold porridge and cold tisane, which must have shamed her and made her even angrier. They spoke together in low whispers. Speckles sent
horse and man.
Rooks and Stalia heard Syrup's hoofbeats and rushed outside to talk to Willem. With a meaningful glance at her sister, Persia opened the front shutters so that she and Wren could eavesdrop on the angry conversation in the yard.
"Beaten to a bloody pulp! Brought up to be ruffians! Thumbprints on her neck! Does no one any harm? Shoulder dislocated?
No, no, calm down.
What are you going to do? Teach those bastards a lesson they will never forget.
Calm down. Let me do my job.
This is my job."
As the adults entered the cottage, the girls scampered away from the window. Teta William came over to Wren and knelt down to her eye level.
"Some ruckus today, I hear. Birdie, can I take a look at you?"
Stalia handed him a lantern. Willem pulled the poultice away from her neck and looked at her wrist. She showed him her lip and also pulled up her split skirt to display her triple-scraped knees, which were not her most serious injuries, but the only body parts that were bloody and dramatic-looking. Willem's face grew grave, but he ruffled her hair casually. Then he moved the lantern over to peer at Lem. He turned to Persia.
"You weren't hurt? Who did this to them?"
Percy told him the names of all the boys. He rose, walked out the door, and whipped plodding old Syrup into an actual gallop. Teta decided that Percia and Wren must be off to bed now.
"Fat lot of help you were,"
Wren told Gilly when the dog jumped on the bed and tried to lick her scrapes again.
"Oh, but one loves thee," answered Gilly. "Let one lick thy legs. Thy blood tastes so sweet, and one's tongue will heal thee."
In the morning, Persia had already risen, and Wren slept late. She crept painfully down the stairs, the dog breathing on her ankles. A fresh loaf of brown bread cooled on the table, and Teta was stirring a huge mashup of eggs, cheese, leeks and potatoes with herbs, which smelled so good. Lem sat up against the window wall. He looked battered, but himself. With his good arm, he held Tillim in his lap. Most of the babe's chubby fingers were in his mouth, and drool dripped down his hand to his wrist. Willem was cheerfully talking to Rooks as they both drank out of mugs. Rooks stood up when he saw Wren.
"I want to thank you, Missy. There's not many would have stayed and fought for my nevy, much less a wee missy. Took a lot of guts in your debt."
Wren was embarrassed. She lowered her glance and sidled over to Willem.
Teto, what happened last night?
I rode to each of them six houses, got sass from Alat's father. That Halat's a mean son of a bitch, but the rest had the sense to look shamefaced.
Though I am not sure if they were ashamed because of what their sons did, or because their lads got tore up so bad by Lem and you and that hazel switch. He grinned at Stalia.
Sam Welt, you raised their wife. Glad you never took a switch to me.
Stalia flashed him a smile and snorted. See that you mind me then. Ren asked,
are they going to live?
Live? Live? Of course. Though most of them are going to have trouble sitting down for weeks. Nice sticking, Birdie. And they all owe fees to Goddard.
Willem used two hands to pull her gently by the waist until she was directly in front of him, and then he raised her chin so he could look right in her face.
See here, Ren. I have dealt with gangs of rough lads before. This is how it works. They need to pay recompense. One will weed our vegetable patch for 2 moons. Another will cut firewood for us. 2 families will bring Rook's produce and cut his firewood. They will pay the healer's bills for caring for you two, and apologies will be delivered all round. None of this wipes the slate clean, but recompense restores the balance in the community, and we can keep the neighbourhood peaceful-like. You're not to fret about any of this. You just concentrate on healing up. I'll make sure the debts get paid.
That's my job.
Ren sidled over to Lem.
How are you?
She whispered.
Not too bad. My shoulder pains me some, though. You? All my hurts trouble me, too.
You was brave to stick with me. You could have run away,
Lem said. Ren didn't understand the stress on her courage. It had felt instinctive to protect her pack. Want to see my knees? She asked, and Lemley tusked over her gory-looking scrapes. After the delicious fast break, they heard a knock on the door. Firl, walking stiffly and with a stripe across his face, appeared in their doorway with his mother. He had 2 overflowing bouquets of mums from his mother's cutting garden. His mother pushed him forward. He gave 1 to Ren and 1 to Lem, muttering,
"Please forgive me."
But he didn't really sound regretful. The next knock came from Alat's older sister. She had brought sacks of barley candy and a curious, impudent look. And so it went all day, a steady stream of forced apologies, awkwardly delivered and received. Though he stayed with them gathering his strength for 2 days, Lemley healed without complications. Then his uncle took him home, and Ren dared to hope that this trouble had passed without consequences. 2 weeks later, as she walked home from the village market with salt, a pork bone, and some rye flour, she heard hoofbeats.
"Hold up there, gal,"
said a man who rode up behind Ren and passed her on the path, blocking her way with his horse. The man dismounted in front of her. His face looked familiar.
"I have to hurry home."
Ren tried to brush by him, but he grabbed her by the shoulder in a tight grip.
"Why are you bothering me?"
Ren asked, with a defiant jut of her chin.
"You're the Donegal brat Willem's raising."
"Peacekeeper Willem won't like you disturbing me, and he's the Duke's man."
"Here's what I want to know,"
said the man, drawing her close enough that she could smell his unwashed body and liquor breath.
"Who are you?"
"Look, you're Alat's father, aren't you? Haven't we had enough trouble? Just let me go and I promise..."
"Shut up, brat!"
Alat shook her vigorously.
"I gotta think. You came to the village as a lass. There's something not right about you."
"There's nothing not right about me."
"So say you. But fighting boys with a dagger,
sticking up for that pervert, that's not right. What's your hiding?
He grabbed her by both arms and shook her until she bit her own still sore lip. Wren couldn't think of a story that would get her out of this fix. In fact, she couldn't think at all. Her hands clenched tight. She had her little knife in her waistband, but with one arm in a splint and the other holding the market bag, it might as well have been on Daughter Moon.
Here's what I think,
Halat continued.
I take you. I take you down to Goldtown and ask some fellas there some questions. I know people who knows people. People who work for that General Jürgen crossed the bay. Mayhap they'll be happy to see you. Mayhap they'll make it worth me while. At any rate, we'll cause that arsehole Willem a whole mess of fret.
When Wren remained silent, his face got darker.
You think I'm dumb? Willem thinks he can lord it over me. I don't have the coin for those healer's fees. I'll snatch his little brat right from under his nose and he'll see. You could be the byblow of some lord or duke. Tell me your secrets now, gal, or you'll feel the weight of my hand.
No wonder Allat turned out to be such a bully, she shouted. With such a muckwit drunk for a father.
She started to wriggle and kick, trying to slip out of his clasp. He swatted at her a few times, his backhands boxed her ears. As he dragged her toward his horse, Halat used one iron handhold to straighten her up before he landed a solid punch to her cheek that sent her sprawling into the dirt, losing both her market bag and her dagger. The blow sapped all the fight out of her. He hoisted her limp form into the saddle like a sack of grain and mounted behind her. He turned the horse southwest. Wren gradually regained her senses, but she pretended she was still only semi-conscious.
Tell one how to help thee, little princess,
said Halat's mare, breaking into her thoughts.
Oh, horse, would you help me? Can you throw him off?
He is cruel. One hates him. Now?
No, wait a bit. Let me pick the spot.
You dead girl,
Halat said, poking her waist with a hard index finger.
A fortnight,
he said when she recoiled.
You mind me now or you'll get more of a licking.
Halat guided the old and sway-backed horse to skirt any dwellings. She couldn't let him get too far from home. They were coming up on Winton Creek, which gave Wren an idea.
Please, can I put some water on my face? It pains me so. Can I get a drink?
She made her voice meek and frightened. Halat halted, and Wren slipped off the mare. Her abductor threw down a water bag so it hit her in the chest.
Fill that too.
Wren soaked her cheek in the cold creek water and took a long drink. Halat sat relaxed in his seat, one hand slack on the pommel as he watched his captive, and the other thoughtfully picking his teeth with his fingernail. Wren filled the water bag, praying to Nargis. As she threw the water bag toward Halat, hoping he would reach for it with two hands, she sent to the mare, "Rear and dump him in the creek, now!" The horse reared up on her hind legs so abruptly that she threw Halat violently onto the rocks of the creek bed. Wren didn't stop to watch. She was already running as fast as she could down the bank. Only when she realised that no footsteps or hooves pursued her and she stopped to catch her breath, did she realise that just escaping from Halat wouldn't keep her safe.
"What about when he talks about something being wrong about me?"
She could easily imagine gossip and rumours spreading among Halat's drinking cronies.
Do I have to go back? What if his legs are broken? What if his back is broken? I could push his face under the water, but he would see me. He would reach out and grab me.
She compromised by deciding just to go back and check on his condition. With great dread, she circled around to the spot where the horse had thrown her rider. The mare munched the grass nearby. Halat lay on his back with his knees and boots out of the water and the rest of his body submerged. It didn't look as if he'd moved since the fall. Wren approached with the wariness of a rabbit that suspects a snare is about to snap. Under a palm's depth of the clear stream water, Halat's open eyes stared blankly. A dragonfly zoomed over his face, and tiny fish nibbled at his hands. Waves of terror, nausea, and then elation buffeted Wren. She found a long stick and jabbed him with it. He didn't move. She poked him hard in the stomach.
"I think his neck broke," she told the horse. "Or he drowned."
"Good," answered the mare, who had tufts of greenery sticking around her bit and caught in the sides of her bridle.
"What will you do?"
"One will feed here, then head back to the stable. The woman does ne beat one."
"Thank you for saving me."
Wren folded herself into the horse's chest and stroked her neck until she could stop shaking.
"I thought that Nargis gave me this talent so I would always be surrounded by those who knew me. But maybe she gave me this so animals would protect me."
Then, marching quickly, she set off back toward the cottage. She'd have to find her market bag, and she'd have to think of what story to tell. As she walked, she felt her cheek puffing up so big her eye closed. No fib about tripping was going to explain this injury. By the time she got home, it was so dark she stumbled on the familiar path.
"What happened to you? Where have you been? We was just about to go searching."
Tetastalia started chastising before Wren got fully over the threshold. Wren described Halat accosting her on the road, letting them believe that this attack was all spitefulness about the healer's fees.
"He hit me real hard, here on my cheek, and then rode off, southward. It took me a long time to get up and get myself home."
Willem smacked his hand on the table.
"The bastard! As soon as it's light, I'm going to get Rooks to track him. That man has just been looking for trouble. Attacking a girl, a peacekeeper's daughter. This will earn him a spot in the duchy jail."
Stalia pulled Wren over to the firelight to look closely at her shiner.
"You'll be all right, my birdie. Bet it hurts, but your teeth and eye are undamaged."
Many a person's felt the weight of that idiot's fist. She made a warm compress for Wren's eye and tore up bread into her soup to make it easier to chew. After school the next day, Wren was cleaning the chickens' roosts in the stable when Willem rode in the yard. She ducked out of sight so she could hear his conversation with Stalia.
"Found the bastard in Winton Creek, south of Accity's fallow pasture. Dead. We can't figure out how he ended up in the water, but he must have been drunk to the gills. Broke his back and drowned. Thank the waters we're shut of him and we don't have to worry about him coming after anyone."
The lasting consequence of the fight with the ruffians was that Wren was always welcome in Sergeant Rooks's dark shack with its dirt floor. Rooks and Lem didn't farm. They didn't even keep a vegetable garden. They didn't actually own their plot, but rather squatted on it, trusting that no one would turn them in. They satisfied most of their needs by hunting and traded game and pelts for the rest. Wren mulled over her situation for weeks. One day, visiting with Lem when her wrist was healed and her eye socket only faintly black and green, she burst out to his uncle,
"You were a scout in the army, weren't you?"
"Yeah,"
replied Sergeant Rooks.
"Would you teach me?"
"Teach you what?"
"How to be safe in the woods. How to track an enemy. How to hunt. How to fight," said Wren.
Got a taste for it, have you?
Asked the old soldier.
No. Well, Wren considered, a little. But more, I realised that sometimes fighting can be necessary.
You don't cousin me, missy, said Rooks.
Wren's lungs forgot how to draw in air.
Wren, my arse. Hawk, more likely.
Wren breathed again.
And would you do this for me without telling my Teta and Teto?
Our secret you want.
Will you? She pressed.
No one has laid a hand on my Lem since that fight, and you took the brunt of Halat's wrath. Reckon I owe you. You're naught but a scrawny thing, he pronounced as he reached over and squeezed her arm muscle. And you'd best have no dreams of becoming a fierce soldier, but I can show you a thing or two. Mind me now, no complaints and no tears allowed. And Lemley, you're going to join the gal. Easier to work with two sparring partners. You are who you are, so you need to know how to defend yourself.